sales is the assumed outcome of any session, right? And I always like to promote e-commerce as a self-service tool that does so much more than just a conversion. Now, we look at conversions a lot with sessions, so I don't want to, of course, take anything away from that, but we need to think about all the goals we have related to website usage and in being useful to customers.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. While you may get tons of traffic for your e-commerce website, if your users don't find your content interesting, they might not stay on it for very long. And this is where the KPIs around sessions are critical. It'll help you understand what's happening after the users land on your pages. It'll also help you understand how long they stay on each page and how many pages they visit per session. The session KPIs are helpful when you might have a lot of traffic, but not as many conversions. But how to optimize the content and journeys to improve your KPIs related to sessions? In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn who brings significant expertise to discuss session optimization strategies for e-commerce. We covered many grounds in this episode, including why the session matters and the pitfalls associated with reading session KPIs. Finally, we also discussed several stories where the session optimization strategies resulted in tangible results for the business and which platforms have higher accuracy for session data. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. So we are going to start with everybody's intros. Chase, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Chase Clymer. I am one of the co-founders over at Electric Eye. We are a Shopify consultancy that designs beautiful websites that are optimized for conversions. And then we help with sessions on the other side of it with paid media and owned marketing. And outside of that, I also host a podcast called Honest E-commerce. So if you enjoy my opinion, there's a lot of it out there on the internet to find.
So today we are going to design beautiful sessions, Chase. And that is going to be so awesome for getting some sales. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Eric, can I move to your intro next, if you don't mind?
Sure. Thank you. I'm Eric Landman. I'm the e-commerce division manager for Earthling Interactive. We are an agency that builds and maintains e-com sites, CMS sites, and web apps. I'm a developer by trade. I'm a Magento certified solution specialist, and I've built about 50 sites. Also, I've built sites out in Shopify, PrestaShop, a whole bunch of other old code bases. So this should be an interesting topic.
Yes. And Eric, you must be thinking that today is my day. You know what? This is what I do day in, day out. Thank you so much for being here, Eric. All right, Chris, can I move to you next for your intro, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. Thanks, Sam. Chris Harrington, President and COO of Gen Alpha Technologies. And we equip manufacturers, dealers, and distributors with the tools and the services they need to sell their parts, their equipment, both new and used online. So that's what we do. Excited to be here. Very interesting topic. I'm excited to learn from people on this call today, too. I'm sure they're going to bring some new insights to sessions that even I'm not thinking about.
Okay, amazing. And the dealers who are going to be listening to this show today, and they must be thinking, you keep throwing new words every single week. Okay, I want sales. I don't want sessions, but you cannot get sales without fixing your Sessions. Thank you so much for being here, Chris.
You bet.
Jeff, can I move to you for your intro?
Yeah. So my name is Jeffrey Graham. I'm the founder of e-commerce management in an e-commerce EDU. I've been in e-commerce a long time. We're a cooperative. We primarily work with manufacturing extension partnerships throughout the country, and as well as do educational course writing. So I've written 84 courses in total. I'm in multiple universities and institutions, and I'm in the $1 billion club as far as sales online. So I've sold over $1 billion online. And yeah, I've been a private equity CEO in the past. But yeah, there's my little... my spiel. So
yeah, and that's exactly what we want, Jeff. Just show us the path of a billion. We are going to be really happy with it. Low expectations, you know? Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, no problem. I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
All right. So we are going to dig right into the topic, okay? And that's going to be for people who might not be familiar with what session is, how to basically understand why session matters. Let's say if I am the e-commerce executive or if I am starting my e-commerce journey, why should I worry about this technical term and why should I care for it? So Chase, to set the stage, do you want to describe what session really is and why it matters for the e-commerce practitioners?
Sure. And I guess I'll let people know a little bit of the behind the scenes stuff here. So I've been on a few of these, and I have explained to Sam in the past a framework that we use at our agency called the Brand Scaling Framework. And we look at three KPIs. And I was like, oh, we can talk about these three KPIs, and that'd be a really great session. And he's like, you know what? It'd make three great sessions. So he broke them all up. So now we're on kind of the last one that we like to look at here. And so first and foremost, why sessions are very similar to traffic. It's visitors to your web store. But at our agency and most e-commerce agencies, we are actually more inclined to look at sessions as opposed to total number of visitors or any other traffic metric, because sessions directly correlate to how your conversion rate is calculated. So that's why we focus on that. And I personally use sessions when I'm describing it, because we're a Shopify consultancy, and straight up on the back end of Shopify, it's like online store sessions is a giant number back there. And it's really easy to point out to people. And it's basically the number of sessions on your online store. And a session is a period of continuous activity from a visitor. And I know a little bit more about how Shopify calculates this. A session is basically, it's tracked with cookies, which are going away. That's a whole different conversation. But it's basically a 30-minute block of activity. So if you're on a website, you know, at 1 o'clock looking at a t-shirt, then you come back at 1:05, that's still one session. But if you're like looking at 1 o'clock during your lunch hour, and then you come back that evening and look at that same t-shirt, those are calculated as two different sessions. So for those that don't know, that's generally what a session is when it comes to a kind of someone browsing your e-commerce site.
So just to make sure I understand this right, and obviously, you know, the business audience is obviously not going to be as familiar with sessions. So you mentioned that, let's say if I'm exploring a t-shirt today and I don't know whether these sessions are tracked based on IP addresses, do you want to clarify that there? You know, is it based on the browser? How are these sessions tracked overall? How does the browser understand whether it is going to be a new visitor? Is it going to be a session based on the visitor? You did mention that it is actually based on cookie. A lot of people might not be familiar with what a cookie really is, to be honest. So do you want to describe a little bit more in terms of, number one, what a cookie is and how the cookie is really tracked in terms of what makes it a visit and what makes it a session?
Absolutely. Cookies are basically a hilarious term for a small file that's stored in a browser. So technically, Sam, you are right. If you visited like my store and you looked at a t-shirt on your iPhone and then concurrently visited the store on your like desktop PC and a Windows, like in an Internet Explorer, which I don't even think exists anymore. If you visited there, that would technically be two sessions.
Yeah.
But most browsers aren't that, like not most shoppers aren't that sophisticated. They're kind of using only one device, maybe two, but it's a lot more straightforward to track that way.
So basically, I'm actually going to recap so far and then we can build on this one. So basically, what you are saying is, let's say if I have two browsers, I am probably using my mobile device, because mobile device is actually going to use a completely different browser than your laptop browser. And whenever I interact with the website for the first time, what my browser is going to do is it's actually going to store the URL. And based on the stored URL, it's going to decide whether it's going to be a visit or it's going to be a session from the same person. So my question, the second part of the question was, how does the browser differentiate between a visit and a session? So let's go through the process again. If I'm coming to the website for the first time, okay, my browser is storing up an URL in its memory that, okay, this is the person that I am trying to differentiate, whether it is going to be a visit, is it going to be a new user, or is it going to be a session, right? Based on that information, and that's what is called cookie. Now, how does the browser differentiate between a visit and a session?
It stores all that data in the browser, and if it's your second time visiting, there's already going to be data cached on you, and it's going to have historical, you know, information there. So knowing you're not a new visitor, unless you clear your browser, there's a whole bunch of ways to skirt and manipulate this data as a user. Yep. But most users aren't that sophisticated, to be honest. And every website on the internet is tracking you in any way that they can to try to scrape any data they can to then use to market and advertise to you. It's just, you know, when you're visiting a website for the first time, you're a new user, second time you're a repeat user, unless you change the window. And it's all about how you're viewing your analytics and about how interesting your people that are showing you your analytics want to get with making it prove their point and not yours.
Yeah, right. And honestly speaking, from my perspective, the reason why we need to understand these details is because that's what is going to drive, let's say, if I am trying to understand my traffic pattern, I need to understand what all of those APIs mean. And if I don't understand, you know, how the browser is really tracking my information, what constitutes, let's say, a session versus visitor, I will not be able to understand, you know, whether I am paying attention to the right KPIs, and then if I'm getting the right traffic, because as a CFO, I'm actually getting the check based on the KPIs. Yeah. So understanding of the KPIs.
I guess a more simple answer to your question is a session doesn't matter if you're a new user or a returning user. It's okay. An independent 31-minute interaction with the website.
Love it. Thank you so much, Chase, for that. Eric, what are your thoughts so far? You know, what is a session in your perspective? Would you like to clarify anything, why it matters from your experience? And I don't know if you're going to have any specific story where you have had problems communicating what a session is to a business user, and then you had challenges why that needs to be fixed. Otherwise, e-commerce site is not going to work.
Yeah, I would agree essentially with what Chase said. The session ID, sessions have an ID, and this is managed by the browser in the background. So it's not something that the user has any control over, really. So that may be a point of confusion. It's like, whoa, what do I do with my cookies? And no, it just happens in the background. The browser sends a bit of information called a header to the server. The server sets up a session ID or it invokes an existing session ID. And then the tracking starts as you traverse the site. Browsing could be one session ID, but actually websites can have more than one session ID. If, for example, you were logged in as an administrator, you likely would have a second session ID that controls the admin area. And the session IDs can have independent expirations, so it's not necessarily a half an hour. That's just a little minor nuance there. Kind of depends upon the platform, and some platforms you can actually control the length of the session. Yeah. So for example, if you knew that your users typically have a 3 or 4 day visit window, they might come in on Monday or Tuesday and look at something if you're in a B2B site, and then they go and talk to their customers or supervisors or something, then they place an order on Wednesday or Thursday, you can actually control the length of the session so that that's just one session, which is kind of mind-blowing. Otherwise, if you don't do that, you might wind up with 3 separate sessions. Maybe they came in Monday to do research, then Wednesday to look at it again, then they actually bought it on Thursday or Friday. That's really not 3 sessions. It could be, but that's probably the same person, which is really what you're interested in. Is this person traversing the site? Where are they going? What are they doing? And did it turn into a sale? So that's the important thing. And that takes a bit of tweaking and looking at the statistics to figure out exactly what the user pattern is. So that's my addition there to what Chase said. Good setup. Glad I didn't have to do it.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Eric, for that. Jeff, I'm actually going to move to you. You know, what are your thoughts so far? Do you have any sort of build up there? Any specific stories that you might be able to share where you had session problems and then you had to fix those?
Yeah, you know, session's extremely important. It can tell you a lot about what's happening on your website. So as Chase alluded to, what a session is when someone lands on a site, session time, counting sessions. We can go through nuances of VPNs. We can go in through incognito. We can go in a lot of ways where they can't get the cookie. And ultimately, you can't find that you know, I won't register as a session. So anyways, there's a lot of ways around it that users use, like DuckDuckGo and such. But without getting into those nuances, a session is super important. And the reason I think that it's important is that it's going to show the activity a user is having on a site. And the activity, you understand the activity a user is having on a site and this consistency of that activity, that will help you determine how to tailor or transform your website or whatever it is to create a conversion. The other thing I look at heavily when I'm looking at sessions is I'm looking at browsers. Okay, so I'm not looking at session by session. I'm looking at session by browser. So sessions in Chrome, sessions in Edge, sessions in Firefox, sessions in browsers, okay? The reason I look at sessions in browsers is I can actually see in more detail how much longer or shorter someone is spending time on my site. And I know Chase had mentioned Internet Explorer's dead. Yes, but Microsoft Edge is not dead. So there is a 12% of the traffic going through Microsoft Edge. So just a side note, Edge is something that I'm going to pay attention to, especially if I have an older generation. And I'm in a boomer. I'm in the 50 to 60. They load it on their computer. They don't have Firefox. They're not downloading, you know, they might have Chrome if they're relatively savvy. But you know what? They're just using an Internet Explorer or Edge now, right? And so, you know, sessions to me is pivotal. It's huge.
Okay. So amazing insights there. So I am actually going to have a clarifying question for you. So why do you look for the session per browser? Because that's something unique to you know, other people, what they have said. Is it because each browser is going to constitute, you know, one session, even if the same person may be browsing across the browser, but you are actually looking at that because that probably is going to be a single person or persona that you are trying to point out. Yeah. Am I following you or?
Yeah, most people don't float across browsers, meaning that if you're a Google Chrome user, you're most likely using Google Chrome consistently. Yeah. You know, they're not that, you know, like Chase had alluded to, it's not that sophisticated. The average user is not cross browsing and doing kind of some of the technical stuff that we do maybe, right? But the reason I look at the sessions by browser is it'll allow me to tailor and target my understanding of my audience. Okay. So if I'm having a heavily Chrome, let's say session time is 5 minutes on Chrome and 2 minutes on Firefox. Okay. Should I be spending more time on my efforts to be important to Firefox or to Chrome? Right. Should I be spending, you know, and I look at things from an e-commerce perspective, right? So I'm coming in this from an e-com sell online perspective, not a web development perspective. Although I've done a ton of that in my life, but the breaking it down in that level helps me better define both the activity that's happening on the browsers, but then also if I'm advertising, it's helping me understand where I need to spend my money.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, Jeff, and I am actually going to have a follow-up question for Chris, because Chris is going to be involved in a lot of development activities, and I kind of agree with Jeff's insight about sessions that, you know what, you need to be looking at session per browser, because that's where, let's say, if 80% of the traffic is really going to be on Chrome, then maybe you should not be optimizing on IE, because that's going to be real money right there, right? So that could be a great insight overall in prioritizing your development effort from the feature set perspective. But I don't know if there is going to be one-to-one correlation in terms of if you majority of the traffic is coming from there, then the majority of the conversion are going to be coming from there as well. So what are your thoughts so far, Chris?
Yeah, I agree with what everybody has said here, and it's a great build-up. I would say, I guess just to comment on the developer side that you just mentioned, originally when we developed our product, it was for IE users. We really thought IE was going to be the prominent browser. There was some Flash that was enabled and allowed in the past, and we had some functionality that utilized Flash. And as IE went away and Flash went away, we had to adjust our product. So as a developer, I will definitely say that's something that, so if there are customers out here who are developing their own websites and responsible for doing that, they need to be paying attention to that stuff. We certainly, as developers who are a vendor for companies, we're paying attention to that for you and making the plans and scheduling the development changes to make sure that the site performs in a way that it should. I think that One thing that I'll add to everything that's been said here, because I know sales is the assumed outcome of any session, right? And I always like to promote e-commerce as a self-service tool that does so much more than just a conversion. Now, we look at conversions a lot with sessions, so I don't want to, of course, take anything away from that, but we need to think about all the goals we have related to website usage. And in being useful to customers, things like when is my order going to arrive, has my order shipped, order status tracking information can be many of your sessions. So your session is enabling that user to have useful information after they've already created the conversion. So I would say that we need to look at further metrics just to, you know, make sure that, and this is where you can dive in deeper into Google Analytics and have better streams and flow, workflow of information telling you where are people going so that you don't feel all user sessions were invalid or not appropriate. Because a lot of times people are just looking for information and they might want to look at information multiple times before they actually convert. So those are some of the things that I would just add in addition to what everybody has said here today.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. So, Chase, I'm actually going to come to you and let's talk about business, baby. We are going to be talking about, you know, any specific stories that you might have. Obviously, you must have debugged a lot. So I'm actually looking for any specific stories that you might be able to share where, let's say, I don't know whether they had a traffic or their problems were related to sessions. If you have any specific KPIs that you paid attention to and then what you did to fix that and what was the final outcome? Do you have any specific stories that you might be able to share?
I do. Before that, though, I kind of want to just touch a little bit on what we've been talking about here today. So in discussing sessions, a lot of the stuff that we were talking about, getting to the nitty gritty of the analytics, taking a look at like per, like, you know, by browser or kind of what they were doing within that session, perhaps with like some sort of like spying tool, like a crazy, is it Crazy Egg or the Hotjar, you know, some of those things. You know, I think those would actually end up more on like the conversion rate optimization or like the site optimization side of the spectrum. And not really, that's not really an effort to increase sessions as a whole. So I guess my perspective in coming into this was like taking a look at the number of sessions you're getting in a given period of time, say a month or 90 days, what have you. And then what are the efforts that you're making to increase those sessions and how do those kind of affect the KPIs? And where I kind of thought about it a bit more was when Eric was discussing this concept of like someone's visiting a site three times.
Yeah.
To then make a conversion, especially on something that's a little more B2B or maybe even a luxury product would probably follow that same kind of use case. What I wanted to point out there is oftentimes a less sophisticated brand or just a younger company that doesn't know what they don't know. And it's oftentimes our job as an agency or what have to educate everybody. So Eric knows this information. He's like, it takes three sessions for somebody to convert on our website. And then I'm sure if you dove in a bit more, you'll notice that there's a lot of sessions where they don't come back, or maybe they only come back twice. So my brain would light up as a strategist. It's like, okay, well, what is our remarketing strategy? How are we trying to get these people back to the website through, you know, either paid ads or through email to keep touching base with them? So those are a lot of the strategies that we're doing for our clients, is like taking a look at the traffic that they already have. And where are there opportunities to improve that already qualified traffic and try to bring it back to what they were already interacting with? And it's literally every client we have. I mean, you could pick any of them that we like improve traffic for all of them. Oftentimes, it comes down to a lot, especially these days in e-commerce, we're doing a lot of work within email automation and helping them strategize their whole their e-commerce email campaigns. Email is very huge, especially as of late with, you know, iOS 14 and 15 kind of disrupting how advertisers are doing things these days. But email and kind of owning that customer data is something that's really, really useful in e-commerce and retargeting those people appropriately and using the automations and all the cool stuff you can have with all these integrations to really give them a message or an offer that's in line with it, where they're at in their customer journey is always super helpful to kind of bring more sessions to your website. And then kind of outside of that, we're doing a lot of paid media as well to bring back traffic or try to bring in new traffic that's qualified. And that's always a fun challenge as well.
Okay, so can you provide maybe an example of whatever marketing campaign that you did to follow up with one of your clients? You mentioned that, you know, every client is probably going to have some sort of problem because they all are going to be wanting more sales. So maybe they had some sort of, you know, session problems. And after that, you sort of strategized either, you know, through your email campaign or through paid media. What was the rationale for the decision making? What kind of data you were seeing? So maybe can you provide an example?
Well, I mean, absolutely. Oftentimes with the types of clients that we're working with is they are moving out of that kind of startup phase into that scaling phase. And half the battle is just education. They don't know that these more sophisticated solutions exist and they don't even have a strategy behind it. So there's a lot of migrating people off older legacy platforms onto more modern, smarter platforms when it comes to email. We got a few case studies on our website, but the one that is standing out to me is we set up a lot of email automations for a women's boutique called Betsy Booze. And once we got all of those campaigns kind of cooking, we saw some pretty crazy results for them. I think it was plus 400% revenue from automated emails alone, plus 500% successful deliveries. So we did a lot of list cleaning during that project as well. Got rid of a lot of old emails that didn't make any sense. Got a lot more unique clicks coming through from these emails as well. Specifically because they were more targeted to where the customer is in their journey, as opposed to a more generic kind of old school shotgun style blast with email. But I think email is only just one piece of the pie when it comes to increasing traffic with sessions. I mean, you've got your organic traffic from like SEO. You've got kind of like the new modern earned media, which would be kind of like a PR play or influencer marketing. And then you've got, you know, SMS is kind of hanging out in that owned media space now. And then obviously, if you've got paid traffic through Facebook, Instagram, TikTok is taking over the world right now. So there's a lot of different ways to drive traffic to your website. But which one's going to work for you really comes down to like, where are your customers hanging out?
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that, Chase. So Eric, I'm actually going to move to you for your stories. Do you have any specific stories that you might be able to share where you had to analyze, let's say, your session data, you need to segment, you had to retarget, you had to help your marketers in forming that strategy so that they can really attack those customers wherever they are in their journey? And obviously, that intel has to come based on sessions.
Yeah, I've got two stories briefly. One is for an industrial equipment manufacturer that I've mentioned before. They sell their equipment through manufacturer's reps. So you can go to their website and you can see the model, but you can't see any pricing and you can't order it. You have to fill out a quote request or talk to a rep. These are pretty expensive units, $10,000 to $50,000 each, and they last a long time, but they need to be repaired. So we had a complaint from our customer saying, hey, we can't get at the parts manuals for these devices. How come we can't get at these parts manuals? And that was because in the initial part of the setup, the VP of sales said, oh, nobody needs to look at those. Well, it turned out that the repair people 2 years later needed to replace some widget or gear or flange or something. And they don't have logins. They don't want to go through a rep. They just want to see what it is they're ordering so they can tell the distributor what to get. So we were seeing exactly where the traffic was dead-ending, looking at analytics, seeing they were using site search, going to a particular model page, going to the tab where the PDF was or trying to, and then dead-ending. And that was the end of the session. So we saw a fair number of that. As soon as we opened that literature up, a lot of people were more happy about that. So that was a problem that was solved. And the only way you could solve it was through this data. A second, just a comment that I have is we have another site. It's a consumer site that sells sailboards and windsurfing equipment, rather expensive gear, $1,500 to $3,000 or $4,000. And the owner was just convinced that most people were on mobile devices or tablets looking for these sailboards. I thought, I don't know, it doesn't seem right. But that kind of doesn't seem right. So after about 6 months, we've got, you know, lots of data. Turns out that 54% of their traffic, of their sessions, are on desktop, 42% of them are on mobile, and only 4% are on tablets. So that tablet portion was way lower than I thought. So this more speaks to optimization than anything. But he was surprised that the desktop was that high. And that actually informs his advertising campaign and landing page campaign, because then he can send out, in this case, they're using HubSpot emails that are more tailored for, a bigger screen, more graphics. They don't have to worry about this thing being looked at on a little, an iPhone screen or something. So those are two little use cases that we have experience with.
Okay, so I can see this problem with a lot of different business owners. I mean, they are going to have their own assumptions, and obviously they are not going to have real insight. Did you ever find out where this person got this insight that most of their customers were on mobile?
Yeah, he worked in, he ran several different e-commerce sites, quite successful, but they were in completely different industries. One was in, I think, something to do with pharmaceuticals. I don't know exactly. But anyway, it wasn't consumer goods. It wasn't consumer outdoor goods. And so he brought along some basic information about how this all works, but it wasn't quite exactly dialed into the situation of this particular business that he purchased.
Okay, amazing. So Jeff, I'm actually going to move to you. Do you have any follow-up comments based on these stories that have been shared so far? What are your stories related to sessions where you found something really shocking that you were not expecting or your customers were not expecting?
Yeah, so, something I won't say it's shocking, because to me it's probably not shocking, but it might be shocking to who's watching. A lot of sessions are starting off voice search. So, they're starting off with like talking to their phone, Alexa, or they're talking to Siri, or they're talking to Google or whatever. And Cortana is also used heavily now on desktop. Or they're doing a mobile search first, and then they find a product, and then they go on the desktop to procure it, especially in B2B. That is very common in B2B. Things I look at with sessions that jump off the page is sometimes demographic by device. So I know if they're going to stay on the iPhone or if they're coming off the iPhone, if that makes sense. And then I also want to, I'm just curious what you guys' thoughts are on the platform data being completely bloated compared to like an analytics or advanced analytics data. I was just curious on what your thoughts are, what the group's thoughts are on like Shopify's data being very inaccurate, in my opinion, and compared to, or very bloated, I should say, compared to actual like true data. And I'm just curious as far as the Google Analytics, and who do you trust, right? Do you trust WooCommerce? Do you trust Shopify? Who do you trust with your data? Or do you trust Google? The ones that invented it, invented data. So I would just, I'm just curious what everyone thinks on it as far as what is real data and what's bloated data, because there's a lot of bloated data. So that's earth shattering, at least for a lot of people. It'd be like, I got so many visitors, I got so much traffic, I should be having sales. And in reality, they don't.
Yeah. Chase, do you want to have any comment there? Obviously, as because a, you...
resident Shopify fanboy, I'll take this, I guess. I love Shopify, don't get me wrong, but their data is very basic, right? It's not very in-depth. And even as you go more upmarket with their offerings to like advanced and to plus, you get access to some more stuff. But at that point, a lot of our clients are moving on to a more integrated solution, custom reporting, having more advanced dashboards set up in either like Data Studio or through Google Analytics as well. I would probably say that there isn't a source of truth. There's going to be oddities in every single kind of view. The only source of truth is going to be the money that gets deposited in your bank account. That's the only thing that you can count on. But it's also, it kind of comes with the territory. You kind of have to accept some of the assumptions that are coming with how the data is shown historically. And then especially now with what's going on with iOS 14, just basically getting rid of cookies on tracking on mobile. And there's been a big kind of disruption there on how reporting happens all over the place with return on ad spends, all the way up to kind of browsers even tracking sessions. So that's like a new challenge that marketers and e-commerce operators are now dealing with in the past couple of months. And then now there's the new release with they're not allowing click-through. What I think specifically, it's you won't be able to tell people are opening your emails anymore. There's some new privacy that's coming out through some of the mobile operating systems that are affecting that, which, anytime you take data away from marketers, they complain and then they find a new way to get it. So I'm sure that we'll figure something out soon. But yeah, I wouldn't put all my eggs in one basket. I would definitely have some different views to double check things, especially if things are looking weird or interesting. It's like, okay, let me go look at this from a different way through maybe a different channel. That's not, if it's a Shopify store and it looks weird in the back end there, maybe go look into your Google Analytics or vice versa to see if you can't figure out where this oddity is coming from.
Interesting perspective. Eric, do you have any thoughts there? Who do you trust?
Well, our sites all use e-commerce tracking with Google Tag Manager directly through through Google Analytics. And we set up some pretty dialed in tags and triggers. So we know pretty much exactly where they're going. And if you look at that, it's pretty easy to spot an anomaly. If one month you say, I had 10,000 click-throughs to the checkout page and 12 sales. And the next month was 200 click-throughs to the sales page and 150 sales. Okay, one of those months is really off. But so I don't have any deep experience with Shopify. We built a few smaller sites, and I don't think they even look at their analytics. Bad people. Bad site owners that should look at their analytics. But I don't know if it's reliable. Who knows, right? you have nothing to compare it to. So you're comparing these numbers, like all you can compare them to is themselves over time. There's really no oracle of truth about how much traffic actually really for sure went to your website.
And by the way, I'm actually going to have one more comment there. Recently, I think Google data has been really unreliable in general because they have been struggling with their indexing. Today also, I noticed that there are some problems overall in the GSE. I don't know if you pay attention to that or not, but Google has been struggling a lot with their data. Obviously, Google is the source of truth in general, right? Because Google is the producer of the data. So obviously, you need to rely. And whether you talk about Shopify Magento or you talk about SEMrush or any other analytics tool that you are going to use, they are always going to get delayed insight. But obviously, they are doing a lot of correlation. They are using a lot of AI. Sometimes they could have slightly more qualified data just because of that correlation. But I would doubt if you could actually trust them. So, Chris, I'm actually going to ask you, what has been your experience?
Yeah, I don't have experience with Shopify, but we have Equip Insights for our customers, and that's our own analytics tool that comes with each platform. And really what we do is we build upon what Google's providing, and we summarize for our customers the data that we think is important for them. But still, Google is the source of truth, and I would say that it's important to benchmark, right? So when you want to go deeper, and even when our own customers want to go deeper into their analytics to find where changes are occurring or where opportunity exists, they should be diving into Google Analytics. And if you're not benchmarking, you won't even be able to tell when there is an anomaly to say something might be wrong from Google. So you have to start somewhere. From a story perspective, I think, and I brought up some analytics from our users' websites. And, we've talked to our customers about sessions with product views. Okay. So when you have sessions, you have all sessions, and then you have sessions with product views, and then you have sessions with transactions. And Google can take you to pages where people fall off. So if people are typically, the number of transactions is less than the number of product views. So where the good stuff is all those product views that didn't lead to transactions. And what can you uncover about your sessions with product views that didn't lead to a transaction? If you can go to those pages and look at them and say, especially if you're looking over time, right? We all need time to build up this data so that you're not, sometimes looking at 1 month is not enough time to see trends over time. But if you look at 6 months annually and you say, these products are looking at frequently and they're leading to transactions, these products, these sessions and product views are being looked at frequently, but they're not leading to transactions. That's where your opportunity lies. Then you go look at those pages and identify, do you have good, clear content? Do you have good images? Is there something missing that might be clarifying so that that next session product view could lead to the transaction, which is what we're all really after here. So for me, it's that deeper dive into product views and the sessions to understand, where am I missing? I always like to say, what are they not buying, but they're looking? If you can go find and nail that stuff and start to understand what you can do better related to those products and product pages, that's where your winning opportunities are. So that's what I would say we look at. And, you know, we've done some benchmarking where we have clients who are, I would say, more like a retail client where they're really doing business to an end user. Then we have customers who are manufacturers who sell directly to distributors, okay? And their traffic is all distributors. So it's kind of used like a dealer portal almost, but still a valid e-commerce website. And then we have mixed channel customers. And we've gone out there and we've consolidated session duration, number of sessions, pages per session, and bucketed it into these categories so we can at least tell our customers, because I do think these metrics will be different, but for our customers who use it more like a dealer portal, we're seeing session times up into the 12 to 15 minute, which is very different than when we look at direct traffic user sessions, which are anywhere from, on average, we're seeing 5 to 6 minutes. So it's very different. But by having that information, we can say to our customers, let's see if we can get your traffic up in this area, because that's what we're seeing happening with other customers. So there's some value in these other metrics as well.
Okay, so I am actually going to have a follow-up question for you there. So since you mentioned that obviously the session KPIs are going to be different when you are working in slightly more dealer-centric situation or maybe B2B versus slightly more consumer-centric, right? So I have seen a lot of companies utilizing completely different domain or the site for your retail traffic versus the B2B traffic. I don't know how you guys do this. I mean, see, because I can see if your analytics is going to be mixed, then you are not going to get real insight. And because of that, your marketing campaigns are not going to be as effective just because you are not getting that. So do you typically recommend that they should probably have a different, let's say, the branding presence or the website or the domain for dealer versus retail? Or should they be coming to the same site, same domain, same infrastructure from the traffic perspective?
Well, it always depends on the use case, right? So okay. We need the right discovery. We got to understand the objectives and goals with the companies that we're working with. I will tell you that with all of our customers, they have a website and then they have a storefront.
Yeah.
Again, we work with large equipment manufacturers. So when they want to buy part, that's when they're taken to the storefront. And from there, it's the same place for a dealer, for an end user, or for somebody who has an account who's logging in. It's the same domain, same URL. They're going there. So all of the analytics associated with it will be right there. It's just a difference between the roles and the ways in which the functionality or configuration that the domain has per role of user who's there and what they get to see and get to do. And then as you analyze your analytics, you have to understand if you are a manufacturer and you allow dealers to buy from you after they log in, so there's an authentication. So that's going to be your conversion traffic. If all other users can't convert because it says contact dealer to place your order, right? So maybe they can search for the product, they can see availability, but they don't get price. And now you're guiding them somewhere else. That's a very different analytic result on the number of your website sessions and conversions, because they're not going to convert with you. You're directing them to your dealer. So that's why the benchmarking is so important. If you're looking at things over time to understand, hey, we have a lot of people who are coming who aren't converting, that could tell you that you have a lot more direct users who want to do business with you. And maybe it's time to open up your site to the public and allow them to buy from you, not just that dealer network, because there's a ton of traffic coming to your site that wants to buy from you. Does that make sense, Sam?
It does. Thank you so much, Chris. Eric, you have a comment. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind people that we did talk in the past about what the definition of a conversion is. some of our customers, a conversion is actually filling out a quotation form, and that's the last page they're going to see.
Okay. One of the things that Ashish mentioned, you know, it's not going to be just your marketing strategy that you are going to follow. I think that could be a slightly more deeper strategy as well. For example, your pricing could be off, and that could be the reason why you may have tons and tons of activity, but once you actually get to the price page, then nobody really wants to swipe that credit card. So yeah, so that's very interesting comment there. So Jeff, I know you sort of started this question. I don't know if you are going to have any sort of follow-up comments there. I don't know if you had any stories that you wanted to share. We would love to hear your stories.
I guess, you know, this comment's interesting to me. Usually everyone exits at the paywall. I mean, that's like kind of when people drop off a lot of times. But in e-commerce, I'm just kidding around. But at the end of the day, if someone is exiting, let's say at your paywall, it also is going to depend on your, you know, where your price point is, right? Is this an executive decision, meaning this is a family decision? Is it a low cost item? Is it above $100? You know, we see different trends depending on costing that will come into play on whether they exit at the paywall. And they're not necessarily exiting permanently. They might exit at the paywall, talk to the husband, talk to the wife, talk to whoever, their dog, and say, is this a good idea? Should I buy this? And then they come back and buy it. So, you know, from an e-commerce perspective, that happens all the time. As far as examples and different things, I agree. Data is very skewed. It's foggy. You know, we got Windows 11 coming out where they're saying that essentially to change your browser, you're going to potentially have to change source files. I mean, it's a big deal. If that is the case, then Microsoft's taking a big stance against Google. But with that being said, I think that when we're talking about sessions, you know, you have to just be thinking about it from a holistic standpoint. It's like, how much time are people spending on my website? What pages are they spending their time on? Yeah, if they're on a blog, your session time is going to be higher. If they're on a product company site, your session time is going to be lower. That's just going to be the nature of the beast. And if the data is always going to tell you that, regardless of what e-commerce company you're in, and regardless of what company you're in general. And I think that if you put advanced tracking in, I think Eric alluded to that. Advanced tracking, a lot of folks don't know what that is, but marking triggers and things like, so when someone exits here, it gives you a data point to analyze. That's very important. You know, those are huge, you know, tools that a lot of folks don't take advantage of when you're looking at sessions. But really, sessions is the activity in which someone is spending on your website, and the more time they spend, that tends to be better. The less time, the lower the bounce rate, the better. So there are some things in there that is very true, and everyone has very good points. It's just, you know, I kind of take a holistic approach with sessions, and sometimes it can mean a lot, and sometimes it can mean nothing. It really is a fickle business, e-commerce. So, you know.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff, for that. So I think we are close to our time now. The only thing we can take is going to be closing advice. So Chase, what would be your closing advice? Let's say if you have a business owner and somebody may have told them that, hey, you got session problems, you know, so what would be your advice to them?
I mean, we kind of touched on it. Everybody here on this call touched on it, but it's like everything, every metric doesn't exist in a bubble, and all of it truly matters and it interacts with everything that else is going on with not only your website. It doesn't matter if it's a Magento store, a Shopify store, a WooCommerce solution, some sort of custom build. None of that matters. It's like your customers, your product, your offer, all of that matters so much more than one specific KPI. And you really have to kind of dive in a little bit deeper and, you know, usually either educate yourself until you understand what you're doing or hire someone that knows what they're doing to help you uncover, you know, what the correct decision needs to be. I think aimlessly wandering around trying to improve KPIs because you heard them on a webinar is probably not the best strategy. Like your tactics and your goals and whatever your decision making is should probably be a result of a strategy. So that's kind of my big takeaway here is we talked about a bunch of crazy different KPIs today, and they're all super confusing, and hire someone that knows what they're doing.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Chase, for that. Eric, what would be your closing advice?
Yeah, I agree with what Chase said there for sure. It's especially learning how to analyze and interpret analytics results and traffic through a site and key performance indicators. And the person who has the skill set needs to work with management and determine what is important and what isn't important, because there's a fair number of noise in this data that really just doesn't matter. for traffic. So yes, I completely agree with Chase, and I'm sure Jeffrey would say the same thing. Hire somebody who knows what they're doing about this rather than poking at it around the edges. See, you won't get very far, unfortunately. Well, fortunately for us, I guess.
I've got one follow-up there with it. It's also hire someone whose specialty is in line with your business. Yeah. So if someone came to me as a manufacturing brand, I have three amazing recommendations here because I don't know what I'm doing. So just make sure you're talking to people that have walked the walk in the past and they have case studies to back it up.
Okay, amazing. Chris, what would be your closing advice?
Yeah, you know, we always talk about being directionally correct, right? And I think because some of these metrics can be a little confusing, by establishing a benchmark and looking at a dashboard regularly to see things over time, directionally, are you moving in the right direction, right? Are you getting more sessions? Are the sessions staying on your site longer? Are you getting more sessions to convert? If you're going the other way, now you need to dig in, right? So I think, are you moving in the right direction? Are you directionally correct would be a bit of advice that I say on this particular topic.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, the experience is not going to be any different from your traditional funnel. What you want to do is just move through the funnel. And if you are not moving in the right direction, then obviously you have a problem. Thank you so much, Chris, for that. Jeff, what would be your closing advice for our listeners?
Yeah, I agree with what everyone said. Absolutely. This takes years and years of work and practice and learning to be good at understanding analytics and understanding forecasting analytics, especially in e-commerce. So it's not something you're going to be able to learn overnight. It's not going to be something you're going to learn in a year. It's going to take a long time and a lot of trial and error. The one thing I would say is from the hiring perspective is you just need to know enough to hire well. Know what KPIs you don't want. You know what things that are red flags, because what we see in our space in e-commerce management and in the education side and the whole spectrum is we see a lot of digital marketers that don't know anything. They act like they know everything. They can't convert a turkey yet. You know, the reality is that, and then the owner just doesn't know enough to know they're not good, right? They're not a good fit. You know, I've seen companies spend $150,000 on AdWords because they hired an agency and the agency was trash and then they got the trash result. But you got to know enough to make a good informed decision, but you don't have to be an expert. Let Chris and Eric and Chase and Sam and myself, let us noodle on these weird things and be experts. But you do need to know enough to hire well. That would be my big takeaway.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Jeff, for that. So that's it for today. On that note, I really want to thank you for your time and insights, guys.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Christina Harrington, head over to genalpha.com. If you want to learn more about Jeffrey Graham, head over to ecommercemgmt.com. It's ecommercemgmt.com. If you want to learn more about Chase Clymer, head over to electriceye.io. It's electriceye.io. If you want to learn more about Eric Landman, head over to earthlinginteractive.com. It's earthlinginteractive.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Dave Meyer from Busy Web, who describes how marketing automation works and why that is important to understand customer journeys. Also, the interview with Jeff White, who discusses why it is so important to identify the ideal customer profile for your offerings to streamline your growth. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.